If you've been thinking about private label, I just want you to hold off a little bit. I've got about 2 weeks, and I'm just giving you a little bit of a tease that I'm going to offer something that I've never offered before. It involves me and my family and my warehouse and possibly your products. And so I think it's worth waiting for. I just ask you to hold out. Give me a little bit of time to put it together, and then I think it's a pretty good offer. So I'll be back with it.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 208, Forrest DeQueer. Now, Forrest's name you probably know because he has a business called Go Gambit. And Go Gambit is an auction kind of liquidation company where they basically take big levels of inventory from companies, including Amazon, Overstock, Bad Buys, stuff you want to get out of the warehouse before you get charged long-term storage fees. Sunk costs, really learn that term, sunk costs. That's what his business is. And so Forrest has that business. In this segment, we're going to talk about, though, how he knows so much about the auction business, because that's where he started. Matter of fact, that's his only job other than this. But he's got a huge, successful wholesale business, doing millions of dollars on his own, and then starts up this liquidation business to help solve his problem. And it might be able to solve yours, too. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I'm very excited about today's guest because it's a take two, and I'll explain that in a minute. Forrest DeQueer. Welcome, Forrest.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Well, I appreciate it. It took us a long time to hook up because both of us are kind of busy, right? I've been traveling extensively. You've got this little business that you're running, just a couple little businesses, plural, which we'll talk about. And this is the second time we've interviewed, as we had to change just some of the content. It just didn't make sense for me to edit it out. So I'm just like, let's just redo it. You were comfortable redoing it. I really appreciate you you agreeing to that, because I think there's a pressure. I mean, do you feel pressure coming on the show at all, or just talking about this stuff?
I don't know if I'd say pressure. There's an excitement about it. The pressure is to do well and to convey our message.
Well, it is, and not screw it up, because even me, you know, because I talk so much, I don't know. Once in a while, I'll get a note from somebody, Steve, you're using that phrase. I was using jump the shark in the wrong way, and the person was like, Steve, I think that's the wrong context. And they're right. I mean, I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, my God, I feel like an idiot. But it just felt so right when I said it, and then I feel like stupid afterwards. But I'm like, it's out there. What am I going to do, right? Hey, I'm human. That makes it really feel human. Okay, so anyway, I'm excited to talk to you about, because you have, well, you've got a whole bunch of businesses. I mean, this is not, you're not a small operation by any stretch. And so I think I want to go back and just start right from the beginning. How did you get into e-commerce? Was that something that you were in high school, like, man, I can't wait to get in and sell on eBay or whatever it would be at that time, when you, depending on your age?
No, I'm not actually a natural entrepreneur. I got a job working at an auction company. I worked there for about 4 or 5 years, and I realized the people making the money were the people buying and selling stuff.
So, I mean, are you a licensed auctioneer?
No.
Have you ever thought about, could you do that? Hey, give me. I don't think I could do that. I'm a fast talker, but I don't know if I could do that.
No, I could not do it. I have no rhythm. You need to have a certain amount of rhythm to do that.
Oh, then I'm out. I'm definitely out. If they think people have seen me dance, there's no chance. Well, let's say that. Are auctioneers good dancers?
Yeah. I've been to enough Christmas parties with enough auctioneers. They know how to have a good time.
That's interesting. So there's a correlation there. So you worked at the auction house, and what was your role there, or roles?
Yeah, originally I started in the warehouse. What we did was we received the items for the auction, then we also set them up for the auction. And then auction day, you have the auctioneer who does, everyone's familiar with, and you have a thing called a bid spotter or a ringman. And what they do is they walk into the crowd and they help make sure who has the bid and who doesn't. And they exert a lot of social pressure on somebody.
Yeah, they cajole them. Where I see it the most, I think, is when you look at those car auctions, right? That, I think they're the most extreme examples, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Car auctions are crazy. I've been to a few Barrett Jacksons, and they really know how to put the social pressure on people.
They do. And do you think, I mean, I know they're trying to make more money for them, but they also are, if you're interested in, and they're really trying to help you get past the, you know, it's a couple hundred dollars more. Come on, realistically, you know, get through it. Or are they just out for themselves?
It's definitely a mixture. You run a fine line. You want them to spend as much money as possible because that's literally your job. But the other part is if they overspend, they're not going to feel comfortable to keep bidding. So you want to create a customer for life every time they're bidding. And you want to protect their bid. Auctions go really, really fast. And sometimes people want something and they didn't realize they don't currently have it. So your job is also to make sure they know whether they're winning the item at that time or not winning that item. And make sure they don't miss out on an item over a few bucks.
Yeah, it's a very fair point because sometimes the people bidding are right near each other. And here you're thinking he's pointing or she's pointing at you and they're not. And they're pointing to the person behind you. And that's very, very uncomfortable because I have been in that situation. I've done a lot of auctions going to them in the old days. And there are times I thought I owned it and boom, it's gone. I'm like, wait, what about me? Oh, I didn't see you. And once it's done, right? There's no going back.
Nope. All sales are final.
All sales are final. Boom, period. Okay, so you worked in there, and so you were out in the field. Were you one of those guys that did get a little excited? I mean, did you become part of the show?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the best part of the auctions. It's a show. You're putting on an event. You want people to have a good time. You got to keep the energy level high. That's one of the most important things as a Reman is keeping the energy levels. So sometimes you're part salesman. Sometimes you're the court jester. It's whatever you need to fall into do is what you need to do.
So you did that for a bunch of years. Did you also handle receiving goods? I mean, the whole gambit. I mean, did you learn every aspect of the business?
Yeah, every aspect of the business. So first I started out there part-time on just on auction day. So we did that. And then eventually I got a full-time job there working the auction in the warehouse. And as a job as warehouse, anything they got brought to the door, it was a 100,000 square foot warehouse. It was a pretty big operation.
Whoa.
Everything they got brought in, we had to receive and assign it. And they're called consignor numbers. So everyone who sets an account with the auction house becomes a consignor and they get a specific number. So when their goods came in, we would tag all the items with their consignor number. And then what we did at that auction house, it would go to processing is what we call it. That's how we get an item ready for the auction. At that auction warehouse, we did online auction as well as live auction. So it's called a simulcast. So both auctions were happening simultaneously. So every item that went through that auction house, we also had a photo and describe. So we would do that, and then it would go up into the rings. We called it a three-ring circus. We had three rings that would go on twice every week. One was focused on high-end collectibles, jewelry, that type of stuff. The next one was surplus goods, like pallets of stuff that you'd get from City of Phoenix or school districts. And the third ring was kind of like your general household goods, so furniture, box lots, that type of stuff.
So if I back my truck up, in theory, I could have items in all three.
Yeah.
In theory. And so who made that determination? I mean, is it the expert who's checking in, who over time knows that, hey, diamond rings, Steve, will sell in the high-end auction just because? And I mean, was that kind of the way it works?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. It was up to – the process has changed over time. Like I said, I worked there for 4 years, and we grew pretty rapidly when I worked there. So the process changed, but it came down to whoever the processor was, the person taking the photos and descriptions, they would put it on a pallet, and that pallet would either go to ring one, ring two, or ring three is what we call them. So it would decide which one to go there. So the processor would make the call.
And what happens when somebody backs up with, you know, a whole truckload? I mean, a pickup truckload of stuff. I mean, did you guys always accept it, or was there times that you just said, hey, this stuff isn't worth anything, I'm not going to bother selling it?
When we first started there, we took anything and everything that came to the door. Towards the end there, when I was working the warehouse, we became more strict because what we ended up doing is spending a lot of time on items that didn't sell, or you had a group so big to get any type of bid on it that it wasn't worth our time or the consignor's time, honestly.
Well, and quite frankly, isn't that perfect for what you're doing now, right? Hasn't that taught you, you know, to be more selective, right? I mean, those are skill sets over time. You become... you know, you have an eye, right? You gain an eye for that stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of one of the reasons why we like working with businesses. So the old auction house, you worked with a lot of one-off business. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it'd be a guy cleaning out his garage, someone going out of business, someone moving, so they needed to get everything out. You know, they were liquidating. Here, I like working with people that you're going to work with long-term because it creates a more steady flow of product, and it's the right type of product that comes to us.
Well, then you get to coach those businesses on what you can do with it, right? Because they're not going to send you stuff if they're not going to make money either. It's wasting their time. So you get to coach them too.
Exactly.
Love it, love it, love it. Okay, so you did that. So you learned a skill that's clearly transferable to the e-commerce world. I mean, and I think I keep saying that to people, you know, go back and look at what you did, because a lot of what you've done in life is applicable to your e-commerce business. I mean, I imagine there were other skills that you learned. Well, you were dealing with people, right? And dealing with businesses. That's a relationship thing. You've learned that skill set, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because like I said, after working in the warehouse, I moved to sales, and we were outdoor sales.
So yeah, love this story. Tell this story. This is crazy to me. I can't believe this occurs.
Yeah. So every day, our goal was to knock on 20 random doors of businesses. So we would just cold call, walk into any business, and knock on the door, and just start talking and trying to sell our service.
So I'm thinking about this. I mean, do you pull up in a van and then canvas, you know, four blocks, or were you an individual in a car just going out on your own route and just kind of trying to work your way through? Because I wonder how, you know, if you have two sales reps on the road, do they cross over? I mean, how's that work?
So Phoenix is a huge sprawling city of a bunch of cities connected. There's just a ton of people that live here. So what we would do is you'd carve up. When I was doing sales, there was four of us, and we would section up the city. So you'd say, all right, I got. And Arizona is built in a grid, like a perfect grid. Streets go north and south, east and west. So you'd pick a grid, and you would have to hit all those businesses in that grid, and then you'd pick a new grid that was open.
Wow. And so did you ever look at, I mean, did the company look at closing rates and things like that? Do they track that stuff?
They were trying. We started using Salesforce, but we never successfully implemented it.
Hmm. Did you feel like on the sales side that became too corporate at that point? I mean, because that's a risk, right? Because, I mean, a small business, there's something because you know everybody and it's a relationship, you know, you get to see them. And when it becomes so corporatized, it kind of loses its personality. A lot of companies do. Did you start to feel that way?
I think our goal is definitely to get corporate. But right. One of the big things about corporate, I mean, I've never worked in a corporate world. That was my only job that I had full time before I started my own business. But I would say it seems like corporate to me, it's all about processes, right?
So right.
You have to obey the process. We never successfully put in any processes. So we were trying to do the corporate mentality and try to grow at that rate without any processes to rely on, which made it really difficult for us.
Well, yeah, because you have a huge personal e-commerce business. And I think let's transition to that. You're all about, I mean, you can't do the volume you do without having processes. Is that fair?
Oh, definitely.
And so where did that come from? I mean, like you said, you didn't work. You only had that one job. It doesn't sound like it was very corporatized. A lot of systems in place. It sounds like they had some processes, but generally it wasn't. Where does that come from? How did you figure that out?
I like to go in the gray, but I'm also a big structure person. And one of the things we found as you do a business is every time you can cut or save seconds, you make that up at the end line. Everything you can do slightly faster just turns up at the bottom line. So it's just a matter of surviving as a business and being profitable. We needed systems in place to continue to grow.
How large is the staff that handles the e-commerce side, non-auction?
On my team, there's three full-time, and we have a part-timer that come in and help.
Okay, so to try to get everybody rowing the same way, that's not easy, right? And now, rather than just working the floor, you're leading people, which isn't easy. Do you have a process in place? Do you have documentation? Have you gotten that organized to make sure it's consistent?
Yeah, that's been a big thing we started this year. We've always had – I'm good at making processes. Sticking to them are two different things.
Yeah, 2 weeks. I usually say they last about 2 weeks, and then you revert right back to where you were.
Yeah, so one thing we've really done this year is a thing we call personal accountability. It's one of the things like we want to know who did what, why they did what, and if you didn't do the system, why. Because there's always a reason – there's always reasons to break a system, and sometimes it's better to go outside the system than to color inside the lines. We just want to make sure we know who did it and we can follow up, and that way we can correctly say, hey, you know what, actually you made the right call, or next time let's not do it that way.
Well, and they might have improved the system, right? I mean, you'll take that, right? If somebody finds a better way, you're not going to turn that away.
Yeah, and they're always finding better ways than what I can
come. Oh, cool. Well, that's cool though.
Yeah.
Has it hurt?
No, it's just
a little bit? Come on, man. Admit it. You're a guy. It's got to hurt a little bit.
Well, yeah, and the fact, like, why didn't I see that?
Right,
It's so
that's what my
obvious.
point. It's like, come
Yeah.
on, man. And you feel dumb, and then you walk away like,
Oh.
well, yeah, I guess that's better. And then you realize, and you're like, oh my God, why am I such an idiot? You know, I mean, I should have done it.
Yeah, here's the solution right there.
That's funny. And sometimes, you know, and I've seen this more and more lately, you know, the simple system, simple system. Stay with the simple system. Stop trying to make it so complicated, because that's what that ruins things, right? Simple is easier, right? I mean, it really is.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I'll give you a perfect example right now of how a software just saved us a lot of time. So we're transitioning our Amazon business to wholesale, and I have about four spreadsheets I was using to track orders that were coming in, when I needed to reorder items, and then specific information to each wholesaler that we deal with. I just signed up for Forecastly. Are you
Yeah,
familiar
I
with that at all?
am. I am. Yep.
And it's like they just did everything I wanted in one system, it seems like, and they just cut out four spreadsheets. So I think they cut our reorder time in about half, if not more, and made us more accurate.
And to be fair, it's a lot of work on the setup, but you save it every single day on the back end, right? I mean, that's really where the work is, right? Is that, you know, the setup is hard and you got to get all the information, all the vendors in contact and all the SKUs. However, now it becomes almost not a no-brainer. I mean, it's a simple process on the back end. And that's where the long-term savings are, right? That hard work up front, you know, I don't know how long did it take you to set up?
The Forecastly?
Yeah.
I did it in about 4 to 6 hours, but a lot
Oh
of our
my God.
information was saved in my
Okay.
spreadsheets and Inventory Lab. Those combined made it pretty simple.
Okay, so if you don't have that process in place, it's a lot of work to set up. However, once you have it, you're now, you know, I always remember Todd Lammy saying the same thing. He's like, Steve, Sunday nights for me are my reorder nights. I look, system tells me what to reorder, and he has a model. He has an Excel model he built, but he's a computer, you know, computer guy. But it's like, I look at my orders, and that's my big work. And then I spend my time finding new wholesale accounts. But outside of that, I let my systems do the work. And then he uses a prep center. Now, you don't use a prep center because you are your own prep center, correct?
Yeah, correct. We do it all in-house by virtue of the fact that we are mainly RA. We did that. And then we just haven't been able to find anyone that can do it cheaper than us. So until we do, I think we're going to keep doing it in-house.
Now, cheaper is relative, right? Is the management of it, I think, do you take that into consideration when you say cheaper? Or are you discounting your time?
The beginning, I definitely
Yeah.
didn't Google that, because like I said, I'm new to managing. I'd never been a manager before opening my own business, so this has been a big learning curve for us. And probably the biggest hindrance to the business is me learning how to manage and increase my capabilities of that. But with the shipping, I'm lucky to have an extremely good staff. So once we got our shipper up and trained, they're better at it than I am.
Yeah, it's
So
hard to admit there too, right? That somebody could be better than you were. But that's true. I've heard that so many times that almost every single time, you know, once in a while you'll get somebody like, I'm the best at it. Nobody's ever better than me, like a Gary Vee type, right? But then most of the time I've heard from people saying, you know, Steve, it's hard to admit, but they are much better than me. I can't believe how much better they are.
It's a humbling experience because as a
Yeah.
business owner, an entrepreneur, you're supposed to be the superhero, right? Like you're the guy. And then you realize like, nope, I'm not the guy. Like a good example is I can say as all right, we used to maybe send in items we shouldn't have. They were never severely, maybe it had a little bit more boxware than it used to. And my sister, she's in charge of our shipping. She doesn't let any of that pass ever, which is great. And that's
It's
something I
perfect.
don't have an eye for that type of detail. And the fact that she brings that level to us is a difference changer, and it keeps our account safe. And what's more important than that?
You could rationalize a lot of stuff because you have a stake in the game, right? When you take that away and you say, hey, look, this is an absolute, but it's like really an absolute, not a rationalized on your side, right? Because I know how I would be too. So that's cool. All right. So you've got a very, very large operation on your own Amazon account. However, you also have got this dinky little business that's growing exponentially, where you take other Amazon seller, and not only other Amazon's other businesses, and you bring their inventory to market all on online auctions. And, you know, it's funny as I sit back and I think about how different the world is. The auction world is such an odd, unusual world. And that's no different online. And so the fact that you have that experience and you've been able to bring it there, I think makes it so attractive. So let's do this. Let's take a break. And then I want to come back and I want to pepper you, as Andy Slammons would say, about auction. Well, I'm gonna beat you up. I want to know all the details. Is that fair?
That's fair.
All right, you ready? All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
I was talking to Karen Locker the other day from Solutions for E-commerce. We all know she's a sponsor of my show. She pays me. I don't want to hide that, right? The other thing she reminded me, though, is that if you sign up for her service through my link, you get $50 off, right? You knew that. I forgot that she offers an inventory health assessment. I'm like, Karen, I probably should be talking about that valuable service. She's going to take a look through your inventory and help you figure it out. They're going to take care of your suppressed listings. You tired of having stranded inventory? Is inventory getting lost? When's the last time you looked at your shipments to get them reconciled? How about refunds? Has that happened? Well, Karen takes care of all that for me. She's been doing it for almost 2 years. I pay the same rate you do, but I'm very, very pleased with the service. And two guys, two well-known guys in the area, reach out to me saying, hey, you've been with her. Are you satisfied? I'm perfectly satisfied. And again, I can message her. I get the services I need. So it's Solutions for E-commerce. The only way you're going to get that deal is using my code Momentum. I have a link on my website. You have to go there. If you're thinking about outsourcing that piece of your business, get your inventory looked at.
Dude is pretty smart. Love his business, and I love that he knows his business so well. Anyway, this segment, I beat him to death on the auction business. I really want to understand it. I really want to know the details, because I think you do too. And I think I love the transparency. I was skeptical. I have peppered him as best as I can. But to be fair, you could send your inventory. It gets loaded in a database, call it what it is, for AuctionNation. You get to see each item. So you know what it sells for. Because, and we talk about it in this segment, when I send my stuff to my local auction, these are great guys. There's a lot of trust. But I don't know if there's stuff missing. I have no clue. There's such a big volume. And in this scenario, you do. And it's very interesting. So he gives you some percentages that you can kind of, you know, that you've seen in the past, and that's not forever, not guaranteed, but hey, it'll give you some guidelines. If you need to get some cash back out, 4 to 6 weeks, not a bad time frame. July's coming. You want to start thinking about Q4, you're going to need money. So let's get back into the podcast. We're back and we're talking with Forrest Aquirre, and we just went through, you know, I love the fact that you're transitioning to a wholesale business. I'm a big wholesaler, been doing it forever. And it's ultimately, well, I do some private label too, but ultimately, in order to really create a business, you really have to get there. Now, I don't want to downplay it. I've got friends doing millions of dollars RA. Millions. Crazy. How that takes a special kind of person. Why did you move away from it? I mean, that, obviously it's intentional, but why? What were you thinking?
There's two issues we ran into. Everyone knows about the brand gating and that type of stuff. But the bigger one for us was, if we wanted to continue to grow, the only way I saw us doing that, well, we decided to do that, was wholesale. It's so much more scalable. And once you get the system in place, it's not all time consuming. If we're going to keep growing RA, we're going to have to keep hiring employees and put in a lot of hours. I know there's some people that are very good at RA doing it a few hours. We were not that way. It's a very labor intensive business. So we're looking for something safer and less labor intensive.
And it's not like you can plan, because today it's shirts, tomorrow it's toys, the day after the stickered, then you got unstickered. Those are very hard to plan, right? Where now you can say, I've got, you know, 68 units coming in. They're either getting, I don't know if you commingle or not, whatever you're doing to them, boom, they come in. You know how fast you can turn them. You can plan for it. It's a math formula now, right? With wholesale, it's really a math formula.
Yeah, that's a great point. You can actually plan your growth more steadily. And that's something, as you do business models and more, I learn about business, how important that is. It's nice to actually correctly project that.
I was doing an interview with the gentleman yesterday and was talking about cash flow. And what I was so proud, like as a dad, because he's a young guy, he's 24, he's killing it. But I was so proud that he did a cash flow forecast for Q4. He already knows.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, dude, you don't realize how big of a deal it is that you're not going to have excuses. You're not going to run into challenges because you know what you need. Now is the time to find the money and find the or accept that you're not going to find the money and plan accordingly. You know, you can't plan all this giant month and then not have the money to pay for it, right? So you got two options, either find the money or just admit you're not going to have it and then don't build up this giant plan. So
it sounds to me like you're in the same boat, that you're really putting in the work to have that long-term success. You know, but it, let's be fair, there are margin differences, correct, generally?
Oh, yeah, significant.
So significant. So the going in and finding the $2 product that you could sell for $29.99 doesn't occur on wholesale, generally.
Not that we found.
Not that you found. And if so, though, everybody else will find it. How's it been with accounts? I mean, relationships. How are you finding most of yours? I think you mentioned to me you're using the Wholesale Formula guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Them and Trent, we went to their
Dan and Eric.
Their conference that was, I think, about a month and a half ago. And we just used their method. They know what they're doing and it works.
Tried and true. Okay. And you have the team in place. Ultimately, that's what it takes to really build a wholesale business with their model, is you have to have a team, because it's a scalable business. You've got to scale with it. You've got to have processes in place, people in place to handle, because you're going to start getting a volume, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you projected out when the next employee comes? Have you thought that far out? I mean, as you're starting to see that upward curve?
So for us, we really believe that on the Amazon lease, we feel like our current employees that we have is enough. Except we're going to mainly add, with the software that we're implementing, and then you add in the fact that the VAs, we've just hired our first VA a little while ago, and it's been kind of eye-opening what that can do for your business. So I think our immediate growth, we don't need another employee. Maybe another part-time employee to help shipping. But besides VA, I don't think we need an immediate another employee.
And let's talk about the value of that, because first off, they're probably on the other end of the world. So their hours that they work are opposite of yours. So when you come into work, or your team comes into work, there's work waiting for them because stuff was done overnight, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Our VA actually works a crazy schedule. We kind of let him work whatever he wants, whenever he wants, as long as the work's getting done. He's working his 40 hours. So usually he works opposite hours, like you just said, but last week he worked two 20-hour shifts. He's like, I just wanted to get it done early this week. And at first we had a problem with this, but it didn't matter. The deals are in the pipeline. He generates leads for us. So that's what he does. The deals are in the pipeline. Now it's our job. So it doesn't really matter as long as he's putting in the 40 hours, as long as it's going to be in the system, and then it's our job to follow up.
Well, I think it's smart, and I think that, you know, their focus is very easy to track, right? Because they either bring you results or not, period.
Yeah, it's A or B. They have the numbers they need to hit, and like I said, they're either doing it or they're not.
And the other thing is, I mean, to be honest, I mean, the fact that they are not connected here, that you don't have to look them in the eye, it's a lot easier to say, you know, hey, look, Steve, this isn't working out. You know, I mean, I want to get you there. I want to train you. I feel responsible. But at some point, it isn't working out. It's a heck of a lot easier, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We all like to think when I'm in charge, it's going to be a meritocracy. So everyone's going to be based purely on what they do and how they do it. It's not that easy.
It's like not that easy.
You learn to like people, you learn to love people, and you know their family situation, and you know they're good people. So here, if we have something that's not working in their current fit, we will try to move them somewhere else where maybe I don't need their man hours at that time, but down the road we will. But if I think they're a worthwhile employee, we will shift them around. A VA, I don't think they're going to be afforded that luxury.
No, because you're looking for a specific task. Either you get it or you don't. And some people don't. I mean, and I think that that's okay, that some people aren't, but you get to acknowledge it and then you move on. And I think, you know, while it's a little impersonal to sound like that, it's just meant it's got to work for both of you. I mean, if it doesn't work for you, how are you expected to keep them, and vice versa? You know, if they don't like it, they might say, oh, this stinks. This is boring me to death. Okay, great. We understand. That's nice. Okay, so you then, sorry, I just wanted to get that last little bit about your wholesale. You now have a small business that's turned into a much larger business called Go Gambit. And so that wasn't what it was always called, but the basic concept is, for us Amazon sellers, I guess, or eBay sellers, right? I can have my stuff that needs to get destroyed, right? Which we all know never gets destroyed, right? People were buying the tractor trailer loads of your destroyed merchandise from Amazon, tractor trailer loads, right? Whole businesses that are involved. I can choose to spend the 50 cents and have the item shipped to your warehouse, and you then put it up for sale in an online auction through Auction Nation, and I then can forget it, right? I can kind of set it and forget it. I can take that out of my, you know, hey, cut my losses. The inventory's gone. Send it over to Forrest and he'll handle it. So let's start talking. Hey, why did you get into that business?
So I've always kind of loved auctions.
We've already determined that. That's what you know. Yeah. That's your only job you ever had, Forrest. Come on, man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you know.
Yeah. So maybe I like something else better, but at this point, I'm happy doing this.
Yeah, I don't think you should change. I think you should stay there.
Yeah. So it's a mixture of things. Amazon's a great business model, but there's always the suspensions are real and it's a real scare. So anytime you can diversify with Amazon, I think it's great. So we were always looking for something like that, but it kind of just came down to it solved our need and we thought it would work for others. We had dead stock. We call it dead stock. So that's restrictions, overstock, returns, you name it. Anything I can't sell on Amazon becomes dead stock to me. It's dead. Like they say on Shark Tank, it's dead to me. So we were looking for that and we needed to find an outlet for it. So we tried Craigslist, we tried eBay, and we weren't really happy with the results. So we went to all the auction houses that are local here. And we tried them all, and we actually liked what Auctionation was doing, so we partnered up with them.
Well, let's stop there a second, because I have, Forrest and I have talked about this before. I send our excess inventory. I mean, generally, I sell it on eBay, but stuff that I can't even sell there, it's just not worth my time, or it didn't sell, then I usually send it to a local auction house. But, I mean, you get pennies on the dollars, because there's nobody in my town saying, oh my God, I've been waiting for this Amazon stuff to come or this new merchandise. You know, I mean, there's one person who's looking for a Roto-Zip, one person, not 68 people sitting in that place in the heat, waiting, eating hot dogs, nasty looking hot dogs too. Always had nasty hot dogs at an auction, waiting for 68, Roto-Zips, right? So what do you do with those, right? And that's a real deal. The beauty of what you're saying is that this is a national auction, right? So my stuff, while it can be sold in Phoenix, which is a mega city, but it can also go across the country. Is that correct?
Yeah. So most items are still sold locally, but we are growing nationwide. We actually just started offering to try to get better prices. Like you said, if I have 60 of something, the best way is to get as many bidders, as many eyeballs on that product as possible. So we just launched nationwide shipping on every auction that we do a couple weeks ago, and we're expanding aggressively nationwide.
And so let's be clear. So Auction Nation was a Phoenix-based company. I mean, they would go around the world and do, or around the U.S. and do things. But for you guys in Phoenix, most of your stuff would go local, and you have a big following. And as you said, it's a massive city. So there's millions of people to sell to. However, now it's expanded. How many people are using Auction Nation for the auctions? What's the potential audience today?
Today, there's 64,000 bidders.
And they were only 30-something thousand not that long ago.
Yeah, about a little over a year and 4 months ago, they were at like 23,000.
So they more than doubled in a year and change, and that's just going to keep going exponentially, right? As more people get the opportunity to sit home and buy things, right? I kind of think about it, it's like the QVC when it first started, right? You know, now how many online shopping channels are there on television, right? You guys are kind of in the forefront of this because you're allowing this stuff to start going and it's going to spread like wildfire going across the country. And you're in early.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of what old is new. eBay, as everyone knows, it used to be an auction site. I don't know anyone who really uses that anymore. They're kind of more of a buy it now. So they've kind of left that vacuum and no one's kind of taken up that mantle to go back after that with auctions. And I think Auction Nation's primed to take some of that real estate that was left there since eBay moved to a more of a buy it now platform.
Well, I think because you guys are going to do the fulfillment, I think that that's what makes it work. To me, without the fulfillment, that's where I think that's the scale issue for people, right? Is that piece of it, how does that get handled? And in this model, Forrest and his team are physically doing the shipping. Am I correct when I say that?
Yeah.
So you're receiving, so let's just walk through the process. So I decide, hey, a long-term storage is coming up in August, right?
Correct.
And your advice is, of course, drop your prices, liquidate way before you get to this level because, you know, you are only going to, you're trying to recoup a little bit of your sunk costs, right? That's what you're trying to do is to recoup as much of your sunk cost as you can. The best way to do that is not return it, sell it right where it is, right? And try to get rid of it. However, there are things that just don't work for whatever reason. Bad buys, market saturated, demand is low. So you say, hey, spend the 50 cents if it makes sense and send it to you. Is there a rule of thumb that you suggest to new customers saying, hey, if it's priced, you know, X dollars or higher, get it sent to us?
We don't have a general rule of thumb, but if I'm gonna give you one, if you have any questions, you can always reach out directly to me. But I'm gonna tell you, there's some items that I'm not gonna do well on. Old media, books, CDs, DVDs. There's just not a lot of value there. If you're getting stuff from the dollar store, it's not worth it. If the retail value's less than $7.50 traditional retail, we might not be the best outlet for you.
Yeah, and I don't mean to put you on the spot. Sorry, but it's important. I think people need to understand that. So less than $7.50 buy box price, correct? Not necessarily store price, because we all know that sometimes there's a big gap between those two. Am I correct when I say that, or am I assuming?
No, you're right. It's just one of those things. So we offer multiple price points because exactly what you said. The most important thing for us, everyone's looking for something different. So some people are just looking for something. They don't want to touch any of their dead stock. They want to keep focusing on their business, and that they see that as a distraction. So they'll send us everything low value to high value. So we actually, our auctions start at different price points to afford that for people. So we have auctions that start at $1 for really low value items. We have auctions that start at $3 for kind of that mid-range. Most auctions start at $5. And then sometimes if we have a bunch of one product, let's say you send me a bunch of a cheap item like a blow-up beach ball. Maybe I can't sell it for $1, but if I put 15 of those together, I can sell it in what we call a wholesale auction, and those bids start at $10. And those are focused at resellers themselves. People go to flea markets, do yard sale, go on Craigslist, et cetera.
Yeah, but there's, in that scenario, though, that, I mean, assuming it only goes for that $15, the negative is that's a loser, right? And I guess you're saying, hey, minimize your loss, because in that scenario, it sells for $15. You guys are going to take your 35%, right? I paid $7.50 to get it returned to you. Right. You're going to take your 35. I guess there's still a teeny little bit of money. So that the worst case scenario is you break even on your 50 cents. So there's only upside. I guess that's really what you're saying. It's minimized. Yeah, that makes sense to me. As long as you're putting it, because if I send you something and I spend 50 cents to get it to you, and I guess if you started at $1, I make a whopping 15 cents. The PayPal fees when you send it to me will eat that up, right? That's not going to work.
We eat the PayPal fees.
Oh, you there's do?
Yeah.
Oh, so I make my 15 cents. Ooh, all right.
Yeah.
So I get it though. And like you say though, the goal is not to have anything returned, right? So you can have to pay 10 cents to have it destroyed or 15 cents upside. So I guess it does make sense to send you just about everything. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Okay. All right, so let's make sure we understand the fees. You guys keep 35%, which you got to pay Auction Ace, you got to pay all the fees, all your staff, all the rest of that jazz. Plus, there is a shipping fee on top of it to the customer if they're going to get nationwide shipped. And there's a handling fee. Is the handling fee also a local fee that's tacked on?
No, the handling fee is only if it's shipped.
Only if it's shipped. So if somebody pays $10 and they come and pick it up at your store or your retail or your wholesale location, whatever, your warehouse, they pick it up. There's no surcharge put on it, maybe other than sales tax or something like that.
Yeah, correct. So every time someone buys something at our auction, there's two additional fees. There's the sales tax, unless they're tax exempt. And there's a thing called buyer premium. And a buyer premium is something a customer pays for the privilege of buying at auction. It's pretty standard. Auctionations is 15%. And for the most part, it's just a fee people don't even consider into their purchasing power.
Right. So that's above and beyond, but that's the right to sell on Auctionation. That's a cost of acquiring through Auctionation, right? They got lots of costs in addition to what you pay them. They have the customers. And that's normal because I think most auctions have moved to that where they kind of split the fees between the seller and the buyer in that scenario. That's really what's happening here. So so when they pick it up, which did you tell me the stat of what percentage? I mean, I know it's because you've only offered nationwide shipping for the last couple of weeks, so it's probably stupid. You know, it's probably 99% at this point. And you don't even have to answer that. So what do you think that it will end up at based on what you know?
I think so. Right now, I'll just tell you, it's about 5 to 10%.
Oh, okay, that's higher than what I would think. Okay.
I think going forward, it's going to depend on the item. I think the biggest thing about nationwide shipping, it's going to let us get better value for clothing and shoes because there's specific styles and specific sizes. So I might not have a lot of extra small people that want a purple shirt with a dinosaur on it in Phoenix, Arizona. Nationwide, I might have. I probably will find a couple people that are interested in that. And then you combine the fact that's a very easy item to ship and it's low cost. So we see that's where the biggest growth is.
And that sounds like a really big opportunity. Now, you will actually sell one shirt. I mean, it literally is. You're down to the unit level in some cases.
Yeah, us and our consigners, our goals are aligned. I want to get the most money out of everything that you send me within.
Because it's to your benefit, right? That makes sense.
Exactly. We work on a commission. So our goals are aligned. Now, I can only put so much resources into it just from a financial report, but we have really good systems in place to allow us to sell everything on a unit level. I think that's what separates us from our competition in the auction market, is the fact that we do sell things individually for the most part to the end consumer, which enables us to get better prices while other auction houses usually have to group some stuff together. Now, we have to do that sometimes as well, but for the most part, we try to sell everything individually.
I'm shocked. I'm sitting here looking at a clothing lot. So this auction is, let's see how many items are in this auction. So there's two pages. Let's just see. I'm going to go to the next page. So this auction is clothing, and there is, this is great radio, 120 items. So it's 120 individual items, including, I'm looking at Under Armour girls, shorts, size, large. So it's one pair of underwear in this particular one, and yeah, one pair, or shorts, I guess they are. And the auction price, does it have a minimum price? Let me see what it says. I don't think it does.
If you look at the bid, it should say...
Okay, over to the side. Yep, bid $750 minimum bid. So in this case, somebody's going to have to bid $750 next because there's already been one bid of $5. So let's just go through the scenario. So I pulled this out of my warehouse or my Amazon. I sent it back to you. I paid 50 cents to have it sent to you. Now, from that point forward, you're eating all the costs, right? So let's assume this sells at the $5 range. You're going to take 35%, but you're the one who took the pictures. You're the one who created the listing. You're the one who's going to pay Auction Nation. You're doing all those additional things. The customer's going to pay their $5 plus their 15%, and then they pick it up if it's not shipped to them. So it does sound like a win-win for everybody altogether, right? I mean, in that scenario, I made money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, other than what I paid, I mean, it's a sunk cost, right? I mean, who knows what I paid? I don't know what the retail value is, but I mean, it's gone. And so I'm happy to just get what I get at this point. I think I get about $2.75 net if it sells for $5. Me as the person who sent my product to you.
I think you get $3.25.
Well, but then I paid 50 cents to have it shipped to you.
Yes.
Yeah, so netting about $2.75. But what did I have? You know, and if I've got 30 of them, you know, I mean, all of a sudden I got some money back. And then let's talk about this. So how long does it take after the auction for me to receive my money?
So after an auction ends, we give our bidders 7 days to pick up their items. So that also means we have everyone's credit card on file, but we can't always run them. So they have 7 days before they pick it up, before it gets forfeited, and we put it back under your account. So usually after an auction ends, it's about 10 days till we release the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's eligible for remittance. So we pay out on the 15th and the 30th of every month. So depending on where the auction falls or where you get it. For the most part, from the day your item arrives in our warehouse, not from your removal, from the actual runs arrives, you're going to get paid out in 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay, so 6 to 8 weeks. So you can kind of plan. So if you're starting to plan for Q4, right, the August timeline to get stuff removed is probably pretty good because that will get removed, sent to you. You'll go through your process of, and in the 6 to 8 weeks, the reason that is you got to process, you got to take pictures, you got to organize it, you got to get the listings created. I mean, all that's considered in that 6 to 8 weeks. So by the time that gets done, we're pushing into October, right? I mean, that's reasonable. And that's still time to take advantage of Q4 cash flow wise, right? So this is a good time, but July is probably better, right?
Yeah, you kind of want to get a – I would remove slightly before for two reasons. When you create the remove order, it doesn't get to our door right away.
Right.
Amazon's actually much faster than it used to be. A lot of times when people create a move order, we start receiving part of that remove order the next day. But we've had times when people create a very large removal order where we don't receive the product at our location until 6 weeks after they created the removal order because it was LTL and it got stuck on something. But most of them come pretty quick. The other thing is we're like a lot of removal season is our Q4, so we get packed up.
Yeah,
so
no kidding. If
you can get in ahead of time, that would be awesome, and we can definitely get it. When we hit that time, our payouts do get a little bit extended. We staffed up this year to handle this last one, but we still fell behind because we ran out of space. So we spent a lot of time moving stuff instead of just processing it. We're actually moving into a new location at the beginning of next month to help us keep that timeline.
But it's in the same facility, so you don't have, you know, it's going to be the same address or similar address for now. And so you can handle it, right? It's not like it's going to delay things even more, correct?
No, yeah, it's going to be zero delay. We're moving with it. We're going to have the whole move done in 2 days, and we're moving inside the exact same complex.
Okay. And so I'm sitting here thinking about the process. So I want to remove a whole bunch of stuff. So I go in and I pick and choose what I'm going to remove. I put in your address where it's going to go. Now, in the old days, I used to have to document and send you all these files and that. It's not that complicated anymore, is it?
No. So one of the big complaints is people weren't sure where their stuff was. So we created a spreadsheet and that was too complicated and it created too much work on our end. We were double entering stuff. So what we created on AuctionNation was a consignor portal. So you can log in and see what items you currently have selling, what's sold, what's owed to you, and you can and see the pictures. You can track everything right inside their website now.
Now, what happens when I do a removal order and Amazon's taking it from, you know, 12 different warehouses? That's not unusual. And so you're getting ones or twos. How do you manage that on your end to track to make sure you're getting all 326 pieces I sent you?
So we actually don't track that anymore on the gross level. What I do it is on a buy a package level. So every time a package arrives at us, we will open up the package and we'll check it for two things. One, do all the quantities match what's on the packing slip? If there's any inconsistencies, we're going to photo it so you can open a reimbursement case. And then also we're checking if the item's damaged or anything. If it's for a reimbursement, we'll take a photo then. So we only check it on a box level. We don't check it on an overall level. Now, if you think you've been shorted, we can go through and see everything we've sold. And if we're shorted there, then we can help you with opening a case with Amazon.
Well, what's interesting to me is what you said. You're now fixing a problem because you're receiving, if those shoes were worn and they're not new like they said they were, you're going to let me know.
Yeah, and that's been we offered that kind of pretty early, but we've gotten a lot better at it because honestly, I wasn't aware of how much stuff was eligible to be reimbursed. I didn't realize how many items were. So we've gotten a lot better at that. And it's a constantly changing environment, as everyone knows. I've heard some people say they're not winning as many cases as they were. So we're trying to stay on the cutting edge of what's happening and what we can offer. And then also when things change, we'll have to change the processes that we do.
Yeah, but again, whether I open the box and they're worn or you open it, I mean, it's my advantage that you open it, so I don't have to touch it, right? But it doesn't matter. We're still going to try to get reimbursed. And if we do or we don't, it doesn't matter. Can you sell those used shoes for me now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so again, I don't have to touch it. I mean, I think that's the thing that most people say that they want is to get out of the product business completely, and you're offering that service. Now, again, it's a sunk cost. What's your experience? And I know it depends, right? I mean, I know it's going to depend, and I'm going to put you in a corner, though. I'm going to try and get you to give me a number. What do you guide people at? Because I know you can't commit to anything, but what's a guidance that I can say, hey, I pay, you know, regardless of what I paid, the retail value, the buy box value is, you know, $1,000. What's reasonable for me to expect?
So the key component, I'm going to do one qualifier. If it's a super specific item, I'm not going to do well for
Lederhosen made in Taiwan pre-1969. How are they going to do?
Not going to do well.
Okay. All right. That's a given. All right. I get that off.
Let's say it's a general item that's going well. You could see most items we sell between 30 and 60% of retail, traditional retail.
Wait, so, of store level retail or sale level retail or, you know, so for example, let me think of something that, you know, frozen dresses that used to, you know, we used to sell for $100, even though the retail price was $30, and now you can buy them for $20. What would that help me understand what price, the $100, the $30, or the $20?
It's going to be the 30. It's going to be the one you see at Walmart.
Okay.
Now, there are going to be some exceptions, like those frozen dresses, because they're already so slim and in demand, and they're inflated, and everyone's aware of it. Those we will probably have a better chance of getting the 100 price. So a good instance, what were those Hatchimals?
Hatchimals.
We sold Hatchimals for someone who went restricted this last year, and we were getting very competitive price. We were right up there with Amazon. We were right within a few bucks either way.
Of the overpriced.
Of the overpriced. But that's also a unique scenario. It's not going to be that one rare, let's say, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toy that happens to be really good because it's a short pack. That one, I'm probably not going to get that extra price. I'm going to get it based off what you see at Walmart or Target.
So the percentage you said it was 30 to 60% is what you think?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, after our percentage, that puts about 20 to 40% in your, after our commission, 20 to 40% into your pocket.
And so if they paid 40% on average, you could be back to a break even roughly in theory, or a good percentage of it. Because, you know, I think people have to understand how a retail store works, right? So a retail store gets terms from their vendor, right? They buy it. They want to sell it before the terms are due. Many times, if you're big, like Walmart, you can demand that they take back the merchandise, but some places don't. So assuming they're not going to take it back, they buy it and they try to sell it at $100. Let's just say that's the retail price. They probably paid $50 or $40, whatever it is, somewhere in there, depending, plus shipping to get to their location. So now they start to sell it. Now, they haven't written a check to that whole to that manufacturer yet, but they start selling it and they sell it at $100. Very quickly, they start discounting it, very quickly, because they need to get rid of it as fast as they can. And so they'll go all the way down to, as we all seen, we've seen things in stores for $2 to $3 because they're just trying to get anything they can back to pay those terms, because the bill is going to come 90, used to be 90, sometimes it's 120 days later. So they're now saying, okay, overall, we spent $1,000, we got back $1,400, cut our losses, pay the, you know, pay our $1,000 bill, take our $400, that's the leftover profit we have. That's really the same thing that we're working towards in our business, right? Is because there's a carrying cost, right? And you're trying to minimize that carrying cost for businesses.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. I mean, everyone has their dead inventory. And like you were talking earlier, cash flow is king. We're a component of that. Mm. So when you have your dead stock, to me, the main factors are how fast can I recoup my money and as much as I can get as possible. Those are the two factors. And I feel like, I know 6 to 8 is a while, but that's pretty good with liquidation for the most part. And then also, I feel like our prices are very, very competitive as well.
Well, and you got to give, I mean, we do have to count in that 6 to 8 weeks that you're taking pictures of the product, you're opening the package, right? You're creating a listing, you're putting it up for sale. It's got to run the length of the term of the auction. There's a whole bunch of processes that are included in that 6 to 8 weeks. It's not just, hey, you know, we receive it, it sells that day, and you get paid. There's no way. I mean, it's a couple weeks of just that processing that's included in there.
But the good thing is, you know, your item is going to be sold in that time frame too. Like, it's not like you're going to list it and wait and maybe it sells 6 months from now. So you do have an end in sight because auctions are definite.
Well, what happens when it doesn't sell? What do you do for it with it?
So if an item doesn't sell, for the most part, it'll be one of two reasons. One, it was a fluke. Just for whatever reason, no one wanted to bid on it. It's not unheard for something not to sell. So let's say we have a $5 minimum bid, doesn't sell today. I list it again next week and it goes for $10. It happens all the time. So if it's a fluke, I'm going to put it right back in an auction. If I don't think it's a fluke, I'll put it in one of our lower level auctions where they start at $3 or $1. If I still can't move it then and you have no other items I can't partner it with, then we can do one or two things. It's up to the consignor. I can ship it back to the consignor at their expense, or I can donate it for you. And when I donate it, I take a photo of the item. And I also provide you with a slip to where we donate it so you can use that for your taxes.
Okay. So it truly is a liquidation. I'm not getting this back generally. I mean, unless I want it. But generally, why would I send it to you? If I wanted it back, I would have just sent it to myself. And I mean, I think that's the smart way. If there's something that you think, hey, you can do better personally, put it up on eBay or whatever, then just bring it back to yourself and don't even get involved in this, because there's work and there's cost. So I love it. Dude, I'm impressed. I was skeptical. But Greg Purdy's the one who kept saying, Steve, you got to talk to Forrest, because he's been using it for a long time. And he's like, Steve, you will be shocked at how organized, how mechanical, because this is not easy stuff. I mean, let me tell you, dude, it's impressive that you guys are this level. Who's the detail? Is it Auction Nation that really is the detail oriented, or is it you and your processes?
So as far as their software and their platform, they're amazing. I can go on and on about the things that they do that separate them out. So one of the main things they do is everything we do is guaranteed, which as you as someone at auction, we test everything. So the fact that we give bidders confidence, the fact that they have a bunch of auctions on every day, we're part of our bidders. We're part of their life. We're part of their daily check. They love coming to us. Like they check us every day. So that's the key component of what they do. As far as what we do, we've kind of really, really hunkered down on the processes, processing the auctions. We touch things as little as possible to make sure we can do it as quickly as possible and for as much money. So that's the great thing about partnering with a company with like this. They focus on what they're good at. We focus on what we're good at.
Yeah, I love it. So I want to make sure people understand the auctions are for 3 to 5 days online. Again, you get 65, not you, the seller, consigner, I guess is the right term, get 65%, and Forrest and his team get 35%. That includes all fees, all, you know, for the consigner, correct? There's no additional fees other than what they ever paid Amazon or whatever. You know, that's something too, is that if I had other inventory, I was a small business, or even if I bought a company and I have a bunch of inventory, I can send it to you, correct? You will liquidate that kind of stuff too?
Yeah, there's no limitation on what we can sell. So if you have any other questions, contact. We don't just work with e-commerce sellers. That's our main focus. But we do take all types of consignment.
That's interesting. So if you are like me who tend to buy companies and you buy all their inventory and you end up with pallets of stuff you don't know what to do with, there is an option. Now, you got to send it to Phoenix, which isn't necessarily cheap. But that's your only cost at that point. You've already got, again, we're back to sunk costs. If I can sell it locally and get 10 cents on the dollar, because that's about what I experience, and then they take their fees, that's not good. And so in this scenario, you can probably do a little better. And nobody local, like you said, they're going to put it in a box lot, typically. They're not going to do it by the individual SKU like you guys do. I can't believe the number of units. Have you ever figured out how many thousands of units you have at one given time coming through your place?
I haven't. When we're at our most busy, we process 600 items a day.
600 items. I mean, literally, you're taking pictures, creating a listing every single day.
Yeah, Monday through Saturday.
So that's 4,000, almost 4,000 a week, 120 a month. I mean, Jesus, it doesn't take you long to get through a million pieces, does it?
No.
Wow. Well, if somebody's interested in finding out more, so Go Gambit is the name of your company, and yes, I'm pitching it because, and I don't benefit in any way, nobody thinks I'm benefit, I don't benefit, Forrest doesn't pay me a dime, but I appreciate the fact that this opens up avenues for people who completely, you know, you live in New York City, what are you going to do, have that stuff come back? No chance. You have a contact button on gogambit.com, and I'm going to have that on the website. I'll have all the contact information, and then I'll have a link for Auction Nation too. And when you go on Auction Nation, you're looking for the Go Gambit lots. And it's kind of easy when you look on there how you can find it. And I think it'll give you some perspective. So I suggest you go out and take a look because it'll blow your mind. There's 100 in this particular auction on clothing. There's 120 units that somebody sent to you. You guys went through and organized them, took pictures, and put them all out there. I mean, dude, that's a big deal. I'm shocked at how much work this is for you guys.
We appreciate it. It's a labor of love, that's for sure.
What's the most items you ever receive from one person?
One guy sent us, hold on, let me put the bad radio, like you said, but let me put my spreadsheet. One guy sent me about 8,000 items.
8,000 items.
Yes, that was fun. It was good. And there's a wide variety. And like I said, both of us walked away really happy. So
that took you almost 2 weeks to process alone, right? At 600 a day. I mean, that's a lot of items.
Yeah, it was a lot of work. But the good thing is too, the cool thing about us, we have a lot of really good part-timers that we can flex in. So when we do get something like that, we flex up our staff. Like I said, where we ran into the part past where we got slowed down was a small, we didn't have the space. Now we're excited about having the space. So when something like that comes in, we can handle it super efficiently.
And those are the conversations that you would appreciate up front, right? Because I still have to register to be able to be a consigner. So I got to go through that process. But if I'm going to do that, it's better for both of you and I that we talk about that stuff up first.
Yeah, so what we ask for, if you're going to send me more than 100 of one specific item or more than 1,000 total items, give us a heads up so we can make sure we have the appropriate plan in place.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so I am going to put links for all this stuff because I think it's so important. I think this gives an out. This is a great way to recoup your sunk costs. Remember that term, sunk costs, means that they're gone, right? They could sit in your garage forever. You're not getting a dime back on them in that scenario. You could sell them locally, which I've done. My experience is you get about 10 cents on the dollar. You could do a Craigslist, or I'm not doing yard sales. I don't like holding a yard sale ever. I don't like it. I don't like that side of it. My time is a little more valuable than that. But I know people who do it, and they do that really well. But if you're trying to buy time, as Mitchell Lipp always says, this is a great opportunity. And I don't think there's anybody else really doing it. I mean, it's very, especially to the scale, Forrest. I mean, I'm sitting back and taking it all in saying, oh my God. I mean, I just can't imagine somebody sending you 120 items, you going through and listing 120 items, allowing me to sign in through Auction Nation's consignment system so I can actually see my items, Steve's, because that's one of the biggest fears. When I send stuff locally, I have no idea. I mean, what am I going to do? There has to be a level of trust, right? But how would I know that they took one of the 67, you know, things that I put in there out? Right, I don't go to sit in the auction and watch every bid. There's a trust factor. In this scenario, you're showing me every detail of every item I sent you. That's rare.
Transparency is king.
Well, and hence the reason you're growing and you're having such a great year, because your business is growing, right? Could you talk scale? I mean, has it, you know, are you one times where you were? I mean, where are you at?
Yeah, so we already, the first quarter of this year, we already passed the previous year in sales.
So the first quarter, right, the first 3 months of the year, you passed all of last year.
Yeah, on the auction side.
On the auction side. And they're separate staffs, right? I mean, because that's something else somebody's going to be like, well, how do I know he's not taking my stuff? Well, first off, because you know everything you send him, you're going to go into a consignment shop or a consignment thing, and you can see a portal, and you can see your stuff. So that's number one. Number two, they're completely separate staffs, right?
Yeah, our buyers, they know the auction side, but they're not involved with it on that side. Okay. So we keep it separate.
And you get to use the same service for yourself, right? I mean, that was kind of the reason you started it, was to get your own stuff out, right?
Yeah, it was definitely a necessity we had. We had a lot of dead stocks. I said, we started for ourselves, and we were really happy with the results. And we use it today. We don't ever plan on not using it.
Okay, that's awesome. All right, so you know the goal of this, and I'm going to have the links for all this stuff. I'll have Forrest's contact information. All that jazz will be here. You know, the goal of the podcast is to help people move forward, Forrest. Ooh, that's tough to say, forward, Forrest. Ooh. But that's the goal, though. I mean, people get stuck, right? And so you're giving it out. Give us some other tips, because you've got a big e-commerce business that you've been running for a while. Give us a tip that you think people could use to move their business forward.
Yeah, I think we talked earlier about, you know, you set a new process and it lasts 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. It's a reality, man.
Yeah. One thing we started using, it's a thing called Process Street. So it's process.st. And it's a software where you can make a template for any type of task. And then you can just use it as just like an SOP, which is standard operating procedures. Or off of that, you can create a checklist off of that to make sure something's happening. So whenever we get a new wholesaler that we're representing, we have a template of what we're supposed to do. And then we run a checklist. So we have to then, who's evaluating it? After we evaluate, do we need to go back and renegotiate? Okay, now we place the initial order. Where are we with that initial order? What changes to the listings do we need to make? It's all tracked right inside of that process street, and it alerts the appropriate party to who needs to do what. So instead of us having to manually send someone an email, hey, did you do this? We can just look inside process street and see where we are with that brand and who's doing what and where they're at. And that's really helped us kept accountable to the processes that we're putting in place.
How hard were they to set up?
They took me a lot of time, but the software themselves is very easy, but we made them very, very detailed. So
right.
The cool thing I like about Process Street, we can put a video in there, checkpoints, and insert images.
So if I wanted to, you know, if I wasn't certain, a new person coming in, they can click on a video and they can say, oh, this is how you do it. This is the way we want it done every single time. You're looking for consistency. This is the hard part about building a business. This is where the work is done, but you save it now. Every day, every hour of every day, right? I mean, that's really the time that you save, right? Even if you invested a week, when you save it every day for the next 5 years, that time, that adds up so much scaled, right? Over and mistakes and everything else and consistent. And when you change it, you're only changing it in one place, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it. Oh, dude. Love it, love it, love it. Okay, I'm going to put the contact information out there. Best way to get you is at the Go Gambit. There's a contact us, right? Is that the best way to get you?
Yeah, you can go the contact or you can email me directly at Forrest with two R's, Forrest at GoGambit.com. Mm-hmm. You can reach out to me on Facebook, whichever you prefer.
Okay, and I'll put both of them out there. Dude, I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming back and indulging me again and let me pepper you with 1,000 questions. But it's you know, I guess I would say this too, is the second interview is better because I'm clearer on your process and I know I led you in a couple places, but I think it's important for people to understand because I think it's a little scary for some people. Wait, you want me to just send my stuff somewhere, Steve, and never see it? That's what I do when I send my stuff to auction locally. I send it to them in the pallets. I never see it. I'm not going to the auction, checking off every item, looking at every box. It goes, there's a trust factor. And I don't get a lot of money. And it's not because they're taking it. It's just because there's nobody locally wanting to buy those 67 RotoZips, right? However, in this model, you get to see it. And I think that transparency that Auction Nation offers, and I'm pitching their stuff. I don't benefit in any way. But that's what you want. To me, that's valuable. Man, I appreciate it. Forrest, thank you so much. I wish you nothing but success.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate your time.
Man, what a great interview for segments of your business that are complicated. What do you do with inventory? There are lots of people who, I mean, I've talked to lots of people who live in a small apartment in the city. They can't take back this stuff. Well, this gives you an option. And it's local market conditions. So, you know, as he says, the city of Phoenix is the local market. They do national, but it's only a month old or what have you. So it's going to expand over time. Now's the time to get in, open up an account, start trying it, see what works, what doesn't work. Think through what you want to send. But I love the fact that he can basically take anything. So, you know, do some math, start running your business, cut your losses. Just, we talked through the retail model. This is exactly what a retail business would do. Cut your losses, move on. They're sunk costs. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Remember, I'm loving Instagram right now. Man, I'm just loving it. So I'm on Instagram, ecommercemomentum.com. I'm on Twitter, ecommercemomentum.com, and Pinterest for the pinners of the group. My assistant's been putting a whole bunch of cool stuff out there. Man, she's just so impressive. Ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.